Hello, and welcome to Business Talk. Hi, I'm Chris Kellogg from the Kellogg Crew Morning Show on 94.7 WMAS. And I'd like to introduce the host of this week's episode. He's the editor of Business West. Here's Joe Bednar.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Business Talk. We have a great show for you today. Our guests are Ashley Muspratt, the president and CEO of the Center for Ecotechnology, and Emily Gaylord, the Center's Director of Communications and Relationship Development. Very happy to have you both here on Business Talk today.
Thanks for having us, Joe.
Like to be here.
So CET was founded in the mid-70s. So let's talk first about its original mission and reason for being and how your services and vision have evolved over almost a half century now. What was CET doing at the start?
Sure. So CET was founded in 1976. We're coming up on our 50th anniversary. And we were founded during a time of an energy crisis. So our initial work focused on energy conservation and efficiency. We are actually the organization that helped invent the energy audit in Massachusetts. We're working both with homes and businesses to help them save energy. And that's certainly something that we still do today. I think one of the things that's really cool about CET is that we have stayed true to our mission while also evolving with the times. So by the 80s, when waste management had become kind of another local crisis, we branched into that. And to this day, we still focus on waste reduction, energy efficiency, and electrification, helping residents and businesses, not only in Massachusetts, but in about a dozen states to implement more sustainable solutions.
When you talk about a waste reduction, would we consider eco-building bargains part of that as well?
Absolutely. There are a number of ways that we're helping reduce waste in the Commonwealth. So Eco-Building Bargains is our reclaimed building material store in Springfield. It's the largest reclaimed building material store in New England. We receive materials from a radius of about 150 miles and resell and rehome it. So the materials include kitchen cabinet sets, plumbing, lighting fixtures, lumber, and we're selling both in-store and online. We've actually sold product in all 50 states, as well as a number of countries outside of the U.S. In addition to this work, we also administer the Recycling Works program, which is sponsored by the MassDEP, and we provide no-cost waste assistance to any business or institution in Massachusetts. And what's neat about the program is that we help businesses at all ends of the spectrum. So those that are implementing their first cardboard recycling program to those that are chipping away at the margins and trying to go zero waste. One of the sort of goals of the program is to help businesses comply with the state's waste disposal bans. So some of the materials that we're especially focused on are wasted food and textiles and mattresses, which are some of the newer waste bans in the state.
There's actually a great story right in Springfield, Home City Development, Inc. They were renovating a old abandoned school into affordable housing and decided to implement waste reduction strategies all throughout the project. And so I think that they diverted over 33 tons of material out of the waste stream for that project, just that one alone. And so some materials went to stores like Eco Building Bargains for reuse, and others were properly recycled. And one of the things that we help businesses and institutions understand is just how much can be recycled. I think that's one of the key pieces here, is even things like gypsum sideboard and the construction and demolition phase can be repurposed and reused, so or recycled. So I think that that's a pretty great local story.
Emily, you've been with the organization for quite a few years now. About how long?
Over 10.
So have you been impressed over the years as to kind of the evolution of the connections between CET and the businesses and nonprofits and other partners you work with to kind of sort of meet what seems to be a pretty broad array of goals?
Yeah, have I been impressed? Obviously. I think that what I would really want to hit on, though, is sort of what Ashley was pointing to, is this kind of evolution to meet the moment. When I started at CET, we were still trying to convince people that climate change was real and that it was a problem and that this was something that needed addressing. now we have so much wind at our back. We have so many people pulling in the same direction. Massachusetts was just named the most environmentally friendly state by Forbes. Like, we have all of this momentum now. And so now it's much less a question of how can we help businesses and institutions, and more, how do we help them faster? How do we help them go further? And what's been really exciting for me is, while this climate crisis is going on, you know, it can feel really daunting, it can feel really hopeless, but CET, we get to watch people every day make the right choice, want to go further, want to go faster, want to implement climate solutions, want to reduce carbon in their businesses. And when you're surrounded by people like that and businesses like that, of course you feel impressed and of course you feel hopeful. It's just a very different space to be in, I think, when you're working in climate.
Ashley, can you kind of expound on that as well? I was going to ask a question later on, and Emily kind of beat me to it. And it's a great question about, you know, just the sort of raised awareness of environmental challenges and what everyone from businesses to government to nonprofits to individuals needs to do to it to achieve the future we want. So do you feel like more people in businesses are taking this work seriously, even in a state like Massachusetts, which has always been kind of ahead of the curve?
Absolutely. You know, we had a tagline for many years, "We make green make sense," because we felt like we had the lead with the economic rationale for making sustainable choices. And we've always felt, we'll work with anything, whether you believe in climate change or not, whether sustainability is your motivation, the same solutions that are achieving our environmental goals also improve health and comfort and lead to cost savings. And so we could lead with that rationale when that made sense. But today, that's seldom, you know, the angle that we need to take. A lot of people, a lot of homes, a lot of businesses want to implement energy efficiency and electrification solutions for the sake of the climate, for the sake of decarbonization. So it's definitely a different narrative and a very different time that we're working in now.
And maybe just to yes and that, can I, Joe? Is that okay?
Sure.
Or you go ahead. Well,
no,
I just want to add that I think what's also really important to name is, especially in the small business community, even if they're climate motivated, we also are in a time where there is financial incentives available, where CET's assistance is no cost. So even when there might be financial barriers, we're in a time where those are surmountable because of organizations like CET, because the state has invested in climate solutions. So it makes it really possible for businesses to do the right thing, regardless of what their motivation is, because it's financially feasible as well.
CET works in both the commercial and residential space when it comes to, say, energy efficiency. Just it can be kind of amorphous for people to think about. So what are, like, specifically the ways you work with those different sectors? And what types of services, what types of partnerships do you make to sort of reach your goals? It's a very broad question, because it's kind of a broad topic. I'd love to kind of get to the nitty gritty of what you're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I was thinking, could I speak to the broadest level, but then I really want Ashley to talk about some of the really cool, innovative things that we're doing. And maybe that's a way for us to tag team this.
Yeah.
Okay. So on the broadest level, we work through state level programs like MassSave, like Recycling Works in Massachusetts through the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. We have a lot of foundation and grant support to basically allow us to facilitate in-home or in-business energy efficiency, electrification, and waste reduction. And so that means that we can really look holistically and comprehensively of the carbon of a building in operations and figure out how to minimize that carbon, either through things like insulation and weatherization, through heat pumps, through reducing your food waste, which has big greenhouse gas implications. And so what I think is really special about CET is we're in the place that's kind of vulnerable. We're in people's homes and businesses, and we take that really seriously. And so we can kind of look very pragmatically and incrementally at what needs to happen, and then pull on the resources and partnerships that we have to make that possible for either the homeowner or the business, and at times the renter too. We are working on some pretty exciting innovative spaces like inclusive utility investments, which I'm hoping, Ashley, I'm teeing you up to talk about that, because it's really exciting. As well as some other initiatives as well.
Cool. I'd love to talk about inclusive utility investments. So you know, by virtue of the fact that we've got about 100 staff, many of whom are in people's homes and businesses every day, we glean a lot of important insights into the barriers that people face to moving forward. And then this enables us to tweak our program and to develop innovative approaches to helping people go further and faster and get to yes. So I think a great example of this is Inclusive Utility Investments, which is a program that we've been piloting in Ipswich, Mass, with the municipal electric light department there. And this is a mechanism where the utility is actually making the investments in the upgrades to people's homes. So they're investing in insulation, they're investing in heat pumps and heat pump hot water heaters, and then they're getting a return on that through a tariff that's tied to the meter. And this is a really important distinction from other on-bill financing that is essentially just a loan to an individual. So you could get a Mass Save loan, for example, Joe, and you would have a new line item on your bill, but it would be in your name and you would have gone through a credit check and you would have had to be willing to take on debt and say, sure, I'm going to pay this entire thing off. With Inclusive Utility Investments, it's not in any one individual's name. So if you're a renter or you're a low-income homeowner that's not going to get through a credit check, you can have access to this program. And one of the guarantees is that when the utility makes these investments, the measures are lowering your total energy costs. So even though you have this new tariff on your bill, you're actually saving money compared to where you were before. So this is a win-win-win for occupants of the buildings, for the utility that's meeting its climate goals and mandates, and for achieving our goals. So we're working on this in Ipswich and now have our next cohort of municipal utilities we're starting to work with. So we're really excited about expanding this approach across the Commonwealth and hopefully beyond.
I think it's such a good example of a just and equitable transition. We talk a lot about transitioning our economy to meet climate goals, but we have to do it in a way that is equitable and brings people along and is inclusive. And this is a perfect example of that. And then the other big space is small business. In Massachusetts, we have a lot of small businesses. And so we take that role really seriously as well. How are we going to bring people along, meet these solutions, meet these climate goals in a way that doesn't leave anyone behind or doesn't transfer the burden of fossil fuels onto the people who are least able to transition off of them?
You're listening to Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West. We're talking today with Ashley Muspratt, President and CEO of the Center for Ecotechnology, and Emily Gaylord, the Center's Director of Communications and Relationship Development. Emily, following up on that, I wanted to ask about this because I talked to Ashley recently about the concept of environmental justice and how you don't want to leave any communities behind as we transition to a greener economy. So, what else are you doing to sort of create that environment?
It's a good question. Two things immediately come to mind for me. The first is language access. I think there's over 360 languages spoken at home in Massachusetts. So it's really easy to think, okay, just delivering these services in English is enough. And we have really good relationships with translation centers and community stakeholders to make sure that we're delivering as many services in as many different languages as possible. The other thing that comes to mind is the Community Climate Fund, which is a fund that was seeded by, it started with Williams College. We're bringing other institutions on. And it's a fund where instead of paying for carbon offsets in, planting trees halfway across the world or something, these institutions are saying, nope, we want to invest in our local communities instead. And so this fund allows us to do barrier remediation. So a really good example would be a business wants to do heat pumps and insulation, but maybe they have knob and tube wiring. Maybe it's a really old building and that would need to be remediated before we could do any of that work. And that's a huge upfront cost. That's where the Community Climate Fund could come in, remediate that barrier and make it possible to continue on with the work to get those measures implemented. The other piece, I think, is just being really thoughtful about the work that we're doing and the message we're delivering and how we're delivering it, being very practical and pragmatic. That's been kind of the roots of CET from the beginning, is understanding that we have these climate goals and they're really, really ambitious, and we're not going to get there overnight, but we can kind of push incrementally and help people along. And I think by thinking that way and really working with the communities that we're in and working with the businesses from a very human business to business level is really valuable. I think in Massachusetts, small businesses are 97% of the commercial and industrial customers. So just to talk about scale, like, we're not a state with huge, huge factories and manufacturing as much as we are leaning on that small business community. And so we take it really seriously that they need to be part of the climate conversation and the solutions that we put forward.
You know, some business owners are probably, you know, listening to this, and there's all kinds of terms and concepts going through their head. So, you know, they're thinking, you know, I'd love to decarbonize my building, my operations, and, you know, maybe even realize some cost savings down the line. So where do you start if you're a small business? Like, what is the first thing you should do to kind of start taking the steps toward all these things you're talking about? Ashley?
Sure. Well, it starts with an energy assessment. So a small business can go either to our website or the MassSave website and find the number for MassSave and schedule an energy assessment. So either we or another vendor would come into the business and identify opportunities for energy efficiency and electrification. Following that assessment, the business owner will get a recommendation report. And we like to put together a bit of a roadmap that helps the business owner prioritize and sequence measures. So for example, if we identify opportunities for both weatherization and a new HVAC system converting off fossil fuels to, you know, an electric heat pump, we would always recommend that the business owner does the weatherization first. That's a really essential kind of pre-electrification step to get your building nice and tight. So we kind of talk with businesses about all of these kind of different solutions and how to sequence them on a timeline and the budget that works for them. We're also, as you know, we've been saying, kind of, we like to think of ourselves as a one-stop shop for decarbonization. So in addition to the MassSave energy assessment, we would also take a look at their waste management and, you know, do an assessment of their waste streams and how they might be able to strengthen either their recycling programs, or if this is a business like a restaurant that or a supermarket that generates wasted food, we could work with them on that. We kind of play the long game with businesses. We like to develop relationships and have, you know, a many years long relationship with these businesses to see them through their full decarbonization journey.
And one thing, I'm going back to that accessibility and inclusive transition conversation, the other great thing about measures like weatherization is they're very affordable to implement, and there's almost always immediate cost savings. And one of our customers, Thrifty Car Sales in Springfield, they called us about HVAC and getting new air conditioning. And we said, okay, we're going to weatherize first. And they realized as soon as they did the weatherization and insulation that their air conditioner wasn't working as hard, and they actually didn't need to invest right away in HVAC. So I think that this is one of those, there's these really simple solutions that have been time tested. And I think with climate, it's really easy to jump to, I'm going to go full solar and battery and EV and everything. And yeah, that's where we ultimately do want to get to. But there are incremental steps that happen before that have immediate impact. The same thing is true around food waste. Ashley touched on that. We live in a time where 40% of food in the U.S. is going uneaten, but 1 in 8 Americans are hungry, and the math isn't mathing there. And so one of the things that we can look at is, okay, not only is reducing food waste and maybe diverting some of that for donation, feeding hungry people, and then also having the reduction on greenhouse gases. So I think it's really important to think about how climate is not just this one, you know, pathway with all of these other justice issues and public health and food insecure issues happening in parallel. They're actually really intersected. And when you can start to connect those dots, you start to really see all of the players and all of these amazing partners we work with every day, and how those choices that we make for our homes and businesses actually implicate so much more than our one little sphere of control.
I also want to emphasize that, like, we understand how busy small business owners are and how many hats they wear and how low on a priority list having an energy assessment or a waste assessment might be. And, you know, we take our role seriously in trying to be like the brain for that business and taking the chaos and the burden of like navigating this process off the business owner. So, you know, in addition to talking them through recommendations, we'll help identify, you know, service providers and contractors. We help with all of the paperwork for accessing incentives. So we're trying to remove the friction and the barriers to businesses feeling like they have the time and the capacity to move forward with these solutions.
Ashley, when I talked to you recently for a story, you told me that you're in growth mode. You know, you're looking to I think essentially double the staff by 2030. Why is that goal necessary? How does it tie into what your vision is for the organization going forward?
Sure. Well, you know, according to the International Panel on Climate Change, or the IPCC, like, what we achieve this decade is absolutely essential in terms of what it means for the ultimate impacts of climate change. And so we, as an organization, like I think every other environmental organization, feel sort of a moral imperative to do as much as we can and move as quickly as we can this decade, because the carbon emissions that we eliminate between now and 2030 are really going to determine the extent to which we're impacted by climate change. Of course, you know, we're not just like done after 2030, but like this decade is just really, really critical. And so we kind of are growing to meet this moment.
We're just about out of time. Is there anything that I missed that would be important to tell people about what CET is doing these days?
No, but I really want people to go to cetonline.org and learn more about us and follow us on social media and get in touch. And more than anything, I want businesses to realize not only are they not alone if they want to tackle some of these issues, but to Ashley's point, we'll even do most of it for you. And so it's we're going to try and make it as easy and possible as possible, easy and accessible as possible.
Thank you, Emily, and thank you, Ashley, for both of you for spending time with us today and telling us all about this really important work.
Thanks so for much, having Jeff. Us. Always such a pleasure to talk to Business West.
And thanks to all of you for tuning into Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West. I'm Joe Bednar, the editor of Business West, and we'll see you next time.